Dialectical Behavior Therapy was created in the 1980s by Marsha Linehan in Seattle, Washington.
Today, DBT is taught all over the world.
We're two therapists who believe everyone can benefit from DBT skills.
I'm Kate.
I'm Michelle.
And this is DBT and Me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome.
Hi, guys.
It's Q&A 58.
Yeah.
I don't know why 58 is cool either. I don't have anything for a long time. I guess 60 is cool.
60 will be a milestone Q&A, so that's pretty cool.
Anyway, I don't have anything terribly exciting to say about the number other than it's good to be getting back to Q&As. It's been a while.
I know. Q&As have been hard to make the time for lately with everything we've had going on. Similar to you, I'm hoping that we'll be able to get back to them more consistently soon, but yes, it's been tough.
It has been. But I think you're starting us off today, though you had a couple of disclaimers.
Yes, we could call them disclaimers. That works. First disclaimer is that I'm a little bit sick and congested, so I don't know if y'all can hear it in my voice. I can certainly hear it in my own voice, and I'm going to try to keep the sniffling and the sneezing to a minimum. But yes, I caught a cold from my son, and I'm a bit stuffed up today. So that's the first one. The second one, speaking of my son, is that I know for the last monthly episode, I was recording at home that day. I also happened to be recording at home today as well. So that time we got lucky. There were really no interruptions from him. Today, while we're recording this Q&A, we'll see if we're just as lucky. But don't be surprised if you may hear a small child's banging on the door wanting to get to his mom at any point. That could happen.
All right. Well, you start us off today.
Yes. So the first one says, today my therapist said that I am studying DBT skills in an academic way instead of internalizing them / practicing them. I agree with her. It seems to be a big roadblock for me. It's like I don't personalize the skills even when I have to give an example or two. Any tips on how to overcome this?
Yes, mostly because I tend towards this as well. I super understand this, the ability to intellectually understand a thing, be able to academically apply it to situations in your own life. Like you can look at your life and see where you could use it, things like that. So absolutely understand that. For me, what I have to do is take time to really intentionally, sometimes like laboriously, practice a skill repeatedly, in order to transfer it from an academic exploration of a skill to something that I can actually reach for, in times that it is needed. I know, I think it's a thing we say a lot, practice, 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 but really, right? Practice, 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 talking about it, describing it, even, teaching it, right? Like, doesn't actually do it, right? The only thing that does it in the end is doing it. Right, is actually putting the rubber to the road and taking the actions. So if to start with it doesn't feel personal and you're just walking through the motions, that's okay, right? At least you're going through those motions. You are getting some part of your brain and or body used to doing that thing, and that's going to help it start to get internalized anyway. And the other thing that I think about is sometimes it can be nice to personalize the skill in some way. Make a little tweak to it so that it feels like yours. For instance, here you go. I will give an example. I'm sure that I hardly go a month without complaining about the PLEASE acronym because PNL really ought not to stand for physical illness. It's inappropriate. It's terrible. I hate it a lot. And so for myself, in my own brain, I refer to that that skill as TEASE with a T instead of PL because technically it stands for treat physical illness anyway. And it makes me laugh instead of making me angry. PLEASE makes me angry every time I think it. TEASE makes me laugh every time I think it. So it becomes a much more approachable skill instead of having something that I inherently find distasteful to something that I find funny. So that's just one example, but anything you can do to tweak the skill a little bit. Like, I mean, in that case, I'm not even changing the skill. I'm just changing the acronym. But it still makes it feel like mine, right? It helps me take kind of ownership of it and make it a little bit more real and a little less intellectual. So I think those are my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think those are my thoughts. What does that even mean? Anyway.
Well, and I agree with you. I also just really wanted to start by normalizing how normal this is, I guess, to put it that way. This is so common to really feel like, okay, I understand what these skills are, but I don't feel like I know how to use them. We hear that a lot, which is why it's not uncommon for people to go through a round of DBT more than once, because so often that first round is just about knowing what the skills are and knowing, like, you know, what the acronyms stand for and just having this rudimentary understanding of things, but then to actually really implement it and start having the skills show up in a more organic way, it just takes more time and practice. So yes, this is where it begins for a lot of people, which is why I liked this listener's question, because I knew that a lot of people would probably feel the same way, that they're also like, yeah, I'm just approaching DBT very academically and I don't feel like I'm doing it. It's a very real phenomenon. But as far as what to do about that, how can you start to feel like you are using skills more? I realized I was going to touch on some things that we've shared before, probably in mostly Q&As, but feel really important to highlight. So one of the things that I talk about is that it can be helpful to pick a skill of the week. So pick any DBT skill you like and just say, this is a skill I want to try to practice this week. And you may start, depending on the skill, by sitting down, doing a worksheet around it, if that applies, because some skills have worksheets, some skills don't. But, you know, kind of refreshing the skill. If you can look ahead with your week and think about maybe some stressful situations you might find yourself in where you might want to try to use it, you can set intentions around that. But you just really want to pick a skill to keep in the front of your mind. And forget the rest for that week, right? Don't worry about them. Just focus on one and trying to really see if there are opportunities to use it and practice it. And then if you feel like you've gotten an opportunity to do that and like it went well, then the following week you can move on to another skill if you like. But I mean, it's also totally okay to spend a lot of time focusing on a skill, especially skills like wise mind and radical acceptance. Like, yeah, you may just be like, this is going to be a wise mind month. Like, I'm just going to really try to find my wise mind as much as I can throughout this upcoming month. And just keep an eye out for it. Because the other thing I say a lot that's important to highlight is that there really are two different ways to come at using DBT skills. One is setting an intention to practice a skill. Right? So it might be like, I'm going to have a tough conversation with my boss today. I want to use Dear Man, right? And you think about that in advance. I am going to try to use this DBT skill in this situation. That works. Other times, you might just be living your life and you might realize, hey, that conversation that I just had with my boss, I felt pretty skillful. Like, it felt effective. It went well. I stayed calm. Everything seemed to go smoothly. And then you reflect on it and you're like, huh, I was actually maybe using some Dear Man or any other skill. And you realize it after the fact that, oh, I wasn't consciously choosing a skill, but I just happened to be acting skillfully and maybe using DBT on accident. That happens too. So you may be surprised for yourself, listener, if you can think back on some recent things in your life where you were like, yeah, I felt pretty good in that situation. And if you want to view it through a DBT lens, you may find you're actually using skills more than you think you are. You just might not be consciously choosing them in advance. So either way works. But those are some things I wanted to highlight is that, yeah, if you're really wanting to flex that DBT muscle, picking a skill of the week could be a good way to go. And also to remember that you can come at using skills from different angles too.
Nice. All right. So the next one reads, so I need input. Someone I thought I knew took advantage of me. I am questioning my judgment and my feelings are so big that I am having problems functioning. There are other areas in my life that I struggle to accept. It seems like this incident has blurred it all together, and I'm just sitting in yucky big feelings. I have only completed mindfulness and interpersonal effectiveness in my DBT group, which is an interactive Facebook group. Should I jump ahead and try to learn a new skill? If so, what?
Reading this initially, I was thinking distress tolerance, first and foremost. And the reason why was when they said I'm having problems functioning, and they also say there are other areas in my life that I'm struggling to accept. I'm just kind of sitting in these feelings, right? I mean, one maybe could make the argument that some interpersonal effectiveness might be helpful because the stressful event certainly involves another person. But I just saw signs for distress tolerance skills all over the place here as a really good place to begin. So what some of those would be, I mean, I think that accepts could help here, right? Having problems functioning could mean so many different things and look so many different ways. But a common way that that shows up for people is like, you know, they're ruminating. They're just thinking so much about the thing that happened, and it's taking up so much space in their brain and their lives that they're having a hard time paying attention and giving time and energy to the other things they need to. And when we're ruminating on something and we can't stop thinking about it, accept could be a really helpful skill from the distress tolerance module. I was also thinking too, because they mentioned already knowing mindfulness. So if we work with what this listener already knows, when they say like yucky big feelings, I was just like, oh, we might want to bring in some wise mind to that a little bit. And again, I don't know this listener, but when they say yucky big feelings, I'm like, well, when I think about what yucky big feelings mean to me, it just means like the feeling is it's overwhelming, right? It's overwhelming. It's uncomfortable. I just don't like how it feels in my body to be experiencing this emotion. And so when the emotion is so big, well, guess what? That means emotion mind is probably running the show, because that's what's showing up and taking up a lot of space for you are these yucky big feelings. So if you're able to get into a wise mind place, which may look like really trying to bring in some aspects of, you know, your reason mind, that may help too. And again, like exactly what that's going to look like for you specifically to bring in your reason mind can be challenging, because that's going to look different for everybody. But a lot of this is that's hard is that, you know, the situation where this person that you knew took advantage of you, it's done and it's in the past. That's a fact. It happened. And it's hopefully not currently ongoing. I would hope not. But so now it is. It's really figuring out what it looks like to pick up some of those pieces. And reason mind might be able to help you start sorting through some of those more like practical logistics of picking up the pieces. Reason mind is good at that. The final thing I would say is, yeah, just therapy. And again, I think a lot of what, you know, I mean, we say this all the time. We're like, hey, if you don't have a therapist, get a therapist. But part of, again, just highlighting what was said here, when the listener says there are other areas in my life that I struggle to accept. So to me, again, I'm just like, oh, now this new situation with being taken advantage of, we're just adding to a pile that already existed. The struggling to accept pile. Yeah. And when there's a pile like that that's forming, this is when working with a therapist could really, really help. Again, skills are amazing and wonderful, and I'm so glad that you have this group that you are engaged in. That's amazing. But also, a therapist is going to help you really figure out what are those past situations where you may need to apply some skills. It really sounds like you're going to be working towards some radical acceptance territory here with this whole situation that happened.
Hey, back off my skills,
lady. I know. That's all I'm really going to say, but I'm just like, don't go it alone. Get a therapist to help you. Because, yes, I'll let Kate say more about radical acceptance, but yeah, just don't go the radical acceptance road by yourself. have a therapist to help you with it.
Okay, sorry, your turn. Don't mind me. I've had to tease you about that. I was like, hearing you talk about the word acceptance, I was like, I see where you're going.
I know, right? Where we steal things from each other. It happens.
Well, so let's see. I wanted to start by just, I don't know, piling on some empathy. We're coming up on 2 years now since I got ghosted by the person, one of my very best friends at the time. And I remember having a lot of the same kinds of thoughts or stress responses that this listener was talking about. I, too, started to, you know, mistrust my own judgment, right? Like, if I trusted this person and thought they'd be around for the whole of my life. If I can be that wrong about somebody, how can I trust what I think or know about anybody, right? That kind of thing, right? Super insecure and, just mistrustful of myself. And I like the description. And lots of big, yucky feelings. That grief came in and kicked my ass. A lot of empathy for how hard it is when someone that you love and trust in some way, shape, or form, right, sweeps your legs out from under you. It is really hard. Check the facts is something that definitely helped me not to question myself so much, because this is one of those cases where it actually validated my feelings and showed me that I wasn't really as untrustworthy as I was feeling. Oftentimes I think people, I know we've talked about this, but come to check the facts with an idea that it's going to be invalidating, right? That it's going to talk you out of your feelings or show how they don't fit the facts. But sometimes it can be used in the exact opposite fashion, right? To really help ground yourself in the validity of your emotional response to a situation. So that's something that I thought about. I definitely wholeheartedly agree with Michelle that distress tolerance is going to be the module, though. I mean, I do like check the facts, so I yoinked that from emotion regulation, but overarchingly, definitely distress tolerance skills. The two that I would lean into probably surprise no one. One is radical acceptance, since I did tell Michelle she was stealing that one from me, right? As she was talking about, it is what it is, right? The betrayal, whatever it was, happened, right? We are past that point in reality and cannot undo that. And so coming back again and again and again to the reality of the thing. But I do love, Michelle, that you had the suggestion to not go it alone, right? The harder the radical acceptance path, the nicer it is to have someone walking it with you. Someone to help you see how valid you are, help you understand that, you know, all of those, I don't know, ass-kicking nuances of radical acceptance, right? That acceptance isn't approval, et cetera, right? All those things that it can be hard to keep hold of when we're working on practicing it ourselves. And self-soothing, right? With the five senses. Big yucky feelings. I guess depending on what they are, if you're in like a space of rage or, abject panic as your big yucky feelings, then maybe not. But for big grief, big sadness, right? Things like that, I find that self-soothing can still be really helpful, and it's, I don't know, you deserve it, listener, right? Some tenderness, some kindness, some gentleness. Sounds like there's not a lot of that in your internal world right now, or external necessarily. So, and if you need more information on both of those so that I don't talk forever, we do have episodes on both self-soothing and radical acceptance. So you'll hear more about those on other episodes.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, the radical acceptance episode, if, yes, that term radical acceptance is unfamiliar, go listen to that episode. That could be a good starting point here.
Anyway, that is it for me.
Yeah. All right. This one says, hello, everyone. So I have a small question and would love some input if that's okay. I struggle with having really big emotions and have been able to use some DBT skills to keep them at bay. But one thing I struggle with is getting a grasp on jealousy. I was wondering what DBT skills you suggest using in moments when it begins to peak up. I usually take to using rest and try to evaluate what's causing it and what steps I could take to simmer it down. But there have been multiple times where my plan kind of falls through. Any suggestions on what skills would be helpful in times like this?
Great question. I think jealousy is one of the too infrequently discussed emotional states. And it's perfectly normal and natural and comes up for most, actually, I'm going to say everybody. Everybody has jealousy at some point or another in their life. Also envy, right? It's different but similar cousin, both of which are really difficult, in part because we shame ourselves about it. We're not supposed to feel jealous, et cetera, et cetera. I guess I would say that the first thing I would suggest is wise mind, actually. I don't actually have that in my notes, but as I was listening to Michelle talk, I was like, you know what? I think making sure that you're honoring your whole self, right, including your emotion mind here, will be really important. The temptation will be to, I think, to run away all the way to reason mind, right? I don't like this feeling. Let me talk myself out of it and why it's not important or why I shouldn't act on it or yada yada. And so instead to try and be reaching really actively and intentionally for wise mind, to have that intersection of both, right? To be tender and mindful of and welcoming of your feelings, but not letting them drive the, you know, car off a cliff, metaphorically speaking. But otherwise, the other suggestions I had was stop, right? Could be helpful to prevent taking unhealthy actions. Similarly, ride the wave, my mouth. Didn't want to do that today, right? But if, for instance, in your jealousy, you are prone to things like self-harm or lashing out at the person you're jealous of or things like that, stop and ride the wave can both be really helpful for making it past the peak of the impulse and moving forward in time in a different fashion intentionally. Willingness versus willfulness could be a great place to look for maybe some shift in how you're doing. For instance, are you refusing to move along or go with the flow of something? Are you refusing to let go of hurt feelings or other emotional states? Right. I know that this is one that shows up for me a lot. It's hard to say what it would look like for any given individual without knowing them better, but definitely willfulness is something that does a lot to keep me pinned in emotional states a lot of the time. So that can be a really good one for, I think, people to look at and examine for themselves when they're having a hard time coming unstuck from an emotion. And one of the few lines I remember explicitly from the handout for willingness versus willfulness is when you can't shake willfulness at all, ask, what is the threat? Mm-hmm. Which I love that question, right? So that if you're like, I'm pretty sure I'm being willful, but I can't seem to shake it at all. I do love that question, actually. What is the threat, right? What's the thing that you're afraid of happening if you let go of your willfulness? And that can often be a door into where to shift it from willfulness into willingness. And apparently I'm just the check the facts girl today, because I also think that that could be helpful exactly as the skill implies, checking the facts of the situation, trying to get a clearer picture, a more objective perspective on what's going on. Because not always, but oftentimes jealousy is fueled by story, at least as much, if not more, than facts. So check the facts can be really helpful to see how much of what you're responding to is your story, as opposed to what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that blends in pretty nicely to the number one skill that I thought of when I read this. because the skill that came to mind for me with this was opposite action, and I'll explain a little bit about why. But I think the important caveat that is really good to name when we're talking about opposite action is that you're only going to turn to that skill if you have first checked the facts and realized that your emotion and or its intensity does not fit the facts. Then you're probably going to go to some opposite action. Or again, even if it does fit the facts, if acting on it would not be effective. So we don't just want to go to opposite action on its own, right? Of just kind of like, well, I feel this emotion. It's uncomfortable. Let me just do some opposite action. You know, no, first check the facts around it. Why are you feeling what you're feeling, right? What's actually going on here? Gather some information. My sense, especially with an emotion like jealousy, we're talking about it, is that chances are, at least with the way that this listener is talking about, is like, you know, jealousy seems to be, I think we all have like a kryptonite emotion. We're just kind of like that one emotion that we're just kind of like, God, I hate when I feel this way, right? It may be that for this listener, but that with jealousy, when they say like it's really big, I'm struggling to get a grasp on it, you know, that tells me the intensity is pretty high with this emotion. And so, again, it may be that your emotion might fit the facts of what's going on that's triggering the jealousy, but perhaps not the intensity of them, which is why I was thinking opposite action might be a helpful skill here. So I had looked at the handout because luckily DBT has a handout that corresponds with every emotion to say, hey, if this is the emotion that you're feeling, here are the opposite actions that you can take that may be what you're looking for. So some of what it said for jealousy, it said, let go of controlling others' actions and stop spying or snooping slash asking probing questions if that is something that the jealousy is leading you to want to do. And it also suggests doing some changes with your body, right? Like half smile, willy hands, making sure that your muscles are relaxed, that kind of a thing. So that was what it said on the handout. I think it's interesting, the let go of controlling others' actions. I mean, that stands out to me a little bit because I think we don't want to admit this or look at it this way very often, but so often what triggers us feeling something emotionally is that somebody around us is doing something that we don't like. We don't want them to do that thing. So yeah, we feel jealousy, envy, anger, fear, hurt, whatever it is, because we're just like, they're doing the thing that I don't like, that I don't think they should do. So I think that is an interesting thing to take note of and reminding ourselves that, okay, I may have good reasons for why I don't want them to do that thing. And also, it's not my job to stop or prevent them from doing that thing. You know, what is within my control, what is outside my control, that kind of a thing. But I do also like what it was saying about trying to change things within your body. A lot of opposite action is about that. A lot of opposite action is taking more of this bottom-up approach where we're changing things within the body to then change the thinking that we're having rather than a top-down approach where we're trying to change the thoughts to then soothe the body and our nervous system. So bottom-up approach can be pretty helpful in a lot of cases when it comes to opposite action. And that may help you, listener, because even though, like Kate was talking about, there can be something to it as far as like a wise mind approach of bringing in some reason mind and using some check the facts and all of that. Those are top-down processes. So try those. See what they're doing for you. They may help. But if they're not helping, then you may need to try to take a bottom-up approach, which, yep, might look a little bit like, I mean, I don't know. I consider riding the wave a little bit bottom-up. I don't know if you do, but I do, where it's just kind of like, okay, I'm just going to see what else I could do here with myself while I'm riding this wave other than the urge that I really want to do. So taking a bottom-up approach may help a little bit. Again, without the expectation of having the jealousy feeling go away. The jealousy feeling may not go away. That's okay. It doesn't have to. The whole point is to have you act skillfully while you are feeling jealous. That's really the main point. And maybe the feeling decreases a little bit in that process and you find yourself feeling less jealous after acting skillfully. That's fantastic. Or again, you can act skillfully and still feel extremely jealous the entire time. That's also a win. So I think part of it is letting go of that goal of like, the goal is to not feel jealousy. That's not the goal. So just remember that the goal is to be skillful. That's all.
I like that. I was thinking as you were talking about that I was remiss in not mentioning that jealousy, like all of the rest of the feelings, is important.
Yeah, right? It's not still bad or wrong.
It still gives you information about yourself and the relationship and the situation, etc. Right. So thank you for emphasizing that you're not necessarily trying to just banish emotion or banish jealousy to the, you know, basement of your feelings.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We're on to the last one.
We are.
And this one dates a little bit when the question came in.
A little bit, yeah.
My mother's reaction to today's SCOTUS ruling, so that's Supreme Court of the United States, and is talking about the overturning of Roe v. Wade, for those who maybe aren't in the country. So that's the abortion ruling that was such a big deal last summer. My mother's reaction today to today's SCOTUS ruling has me feeling not very positive feelings towards her right now. Lately, my mom and I have had a good and steady relationship, and this has certainly destabilized things. I love my parents dearly, but strongly disagree with their views on this topic. I've been using gentle avoid so I don't lash out at her. However, I'm having a hard time on how exactly to proceed in a way that doesn't cause both of us pain. And while I would like to just not think about it for a bit, my mind won't give up dwelling on it. Is anyone else experiencing this? What skills do you find most helpful?
I also realized I didn't include this in my response, but just that question at the end of, is anyone else experiencing this? And then I was reflecting back to that time, you know, summer, I think 2022.
No,
I think so. I think so.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to look that shit up while you're talking.
We're behind on Q&As, you guys. In case you didn't know. But I was just kind of thinking about my own experience when I heard the news. And I also had a lot of family members. And again, I don't know where this listener stands on their view.
You're totally right. It was 2022.
Jesus. Yeah, I know. Crazy. But there were a lot of family members that I had who were pleased by this ruling. And that was very hard for me to know that I had some close family members who viewed this as a good thing for our country and for human rights. And so I was just like, realized now, like, oh, yeah. When they say, is anyone else experiencing this? Yes. I was a little bit. So as far as skills go and what do you do with this and all of that, my initial reaction to this was like, you are making the right call by using some avoidance right now. I was just like, that seems like a wise mind decision to me. Just at first glance, I think that's a wise mind choice. Because, you know, whenever we're dealing with situations that bring up a lot of emotions for us, we want to make sure that we are using skills and taking care of ourselves so that those emotions feel like they are at a safe, manageable level before we are engaging with another person, especially if that other person was part of the catalyst for why we were feeling what we started to feel, right? We don't necessarily want to go into conversations with people when we're at an 8, 9, or 10 on the emotional scale, right? That's too much emotion mind. We want to be somewhere in probably like the 4 to 7 range, right? With how strongly we're feeling something to make sure, and we're talking about wise mind a lot today, to make sure that some reason mind is in the mix and it's not just pure emotion mind. And so avoiding, if we want to use that term, taking some space from another person while we try to work on that within ourselves is a good choice to make. As far as how you do that, though, I mean, some of the skills that I thought could maybe help with getting you into that place where you might feel a little more grounded the next time you see her or talk to her. Copahead, I thought of. I also thought of please and why. Well, I'm talking about wise mind. I had that on my list. So we could check that one off. But as far as Copahead goes, I mean, yeah, think about, like we always say with Copahead is not about imagining this picture perfect scenario and imagining the other person behaving exactly how we want them to behave. Imagine it as it likely would go, warts and all, and think about how you can be skillful no matter what she says or does. And then I thought please would be important because, Lord, don't go into conversations with her right now if you have not been well nourished with your body and if you're running on little sleep and, you know, some of those components of please. We want to make sure that physically you are taken care of before you would be around her where this topic could potentially be brought up and have it be challenging. But let's fast forward and let's say you are around her. And let's say this comes up. What can you do? One thing that you can do, which again, it's up to her what she does with this request, but it's perfectly okay to ask people to say, hey, I'd like for us to talk about something else. Can we change the topic? Right? You can even acknowledge it. Mom, I know we disagree on this. And it's okay that we disagree, right? I don't like, you might not say this. I'm thinking this inside, right? I don't like that we disagree. I hate that we disagree. But it's also okay for people to have different opinions on things. It is. It's okay. Even if their opinion in our mind is just terrible and makes no sense. They can have their opinion. We can have ours, right? And so being able to say, I know we have different views on this, and I think it would be best for our relationship to keep this topic off the table. Let's talk about something else. Okay. I didn't use a dear man script there. Whatever. But it's one way it could look. To make a request about that. And if she decides that she wants to talk about it anyways, well, then guess what? You could decide to remove yourself from the situation if you decide to. And say, Mom, if we're not able to change the topic, that feels really uncomfortable for me and I'm going to choose to go home. Or I'm going to choose to end our phone call. Or whatever the case may be. Because ultimately, even though we're talking about the SCOTUS ruling here specifically, it in every relationship, there are going to be things that we disagree on with somebody else. And sometimes those things that we disagree on are huge moral value-based things that are really hard to disagree on. And it can be a healthy choice to decide, hopefully with that other person joining you and getting on board, that, hey, when we're around each other, we want our relationship to be around other things. We want our relationship to be about things we enjoy, things we have in common, and that we do agree on, rather than highlighting our differences and where we don't see eye to eye every time we're together. That's not going to help build a relationship closer. That's just going to create division. So can we agree on that together? That, hey, we know we hold different views about this topic, but there are other things that we do agree on and things that we can do that we have fun together on, you know, and that kind of a thing. And let's focus on that so we can keep our relationship strong. And I hope that your mom will join you there. That's what I hope for. And if she can't, again, that's a really tough pill to swallow. And sometimes, especially when there's something that is so recent and so big, such as the Supreme Court ruling as it was at that time. I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where sometimes, like we were acknowledging, I think, at the beginning, people, you might just need some space. And with time, you know, hopefully this won't be the thing that she decides to bring up at a dinner 10 years from now. One can hope. But, you know, it's kind of asking people to join you there. And hopefully they will. I think that's all my stuff. I talked a lot with that one.
Well, it's funny because as I was reading my notes before before this whole episode started, guys, I was like, wow, I just don't feel like I wrote as much here as I often do. Like, oh, there's a good solid skills for it, but I just didn't say much else. And I was like, oh, now listening to Michelle talk, I know why I didn't say much else.
Michelle got to the notes first, and she wrote down a lot, and there wasn't much left. It.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just specifically, I think, you know, me, I get stuck on it when people ask specifically for skills. So that's where my brain goes. And you definitely covered many of the skills that I would, you know, very first think of as being for it, right? Cope ahead would be my absolute first go-to, and you went into that one. Effective rethinking and paired relaxation could also work in that slot. I don't like it as much. But that's just pure personal preference, especially if Like, I don't know how often you're seeing your parent. Maybe gentle avoid doesn't mean what we think it means, and you're still going over every Sunday night. you need to practice a new way of thinking about it, right, before going over there. Of, you know, instead of, I can't believe she thinks this way, be like, it's okay. I don't like her opinion, but it's okay that it's different than mine, or something like that, right? Finding a new, more effective thought that maybe serves you better. Wise mind was another one I thought folks needed to lean into. You were there on that one. And I think the only other one I really had was stop, right? Like, if the conversation comes up and, yeah, they can't avoid it entirely. If the listener notices that they are having, you know, a big response starting internally, that they may want to take the opportunity to practice stop so that they don't do damage, right? This person seemed really invested in making sure that they, you know, don't hurt both of them, or as much as possible, don't just hurt both of them in their relationship with their response to this. So, last ditch effort, I suppose, is before something unfortunate comes out of your mouth, is to try and practice stop. Take a few moments, breathe, get that wise mind back on board before you proceed with whatever interaction you're having. Even if that is to proceed by saying you have sudden and horrible intestinal distress and must go home. You know, because you're afraid you're going to say something terrible. So yeah, I know, not much to add on. I think you did a really good job of covering the non-DBT and DBT stuff in that one.
Thank you.
You done good.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this Q&A. And as you all are seeing, right, we're behind on Q&As. But that does not mean that we want you to stop writing to us or stop posting in the Facebook group. We want you to continue to do both of those things because we want to be here to support you guys. And we say this sometimes, where I'm going to just say it again. You will get a response from us very soon, right? Like, if you email us, we will get back to you via email.
Yeah, this is not the first time that person has heard from us since June of 2022. That's
yes, we did respond to this listener, either commenting on their posts in the Facebook group or emailing them back directly. So you will hear from us in a much more timely manner, even if it takes us a long time to get around to actually reading your question out loud on a Q&A. So post to the Facebook group or email us at dbtmepodcast@gmail.com so that we can answer your questions and continue to stay behind on Q&As. We're all good with it. We'll catch up one of these days.
Sounds good.
All right.
Well,
thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
To learn more about us and the DBT skills we're teaching each week, join our Facebook group. Simply log in to your Facebook profile and search for DBT and Me Podcast.